The best way to start your day. Peter St. James and Pat Kelly. 6 to 10 a.m. Good Morning New Hampshire. Weekdays on 107.7 The Pulse.
Yeah, that would be us. Welcome back. 7:12 is the time my computer just started doing all kinds of weird things.
Do you touch the wrong thing, or is it doing it all on its own?
It's doing it on its own.
Yeah.
It's just kind of like, yeah.
Yeah.
So the artificial intelligence is taking over. AI has hit the studio. I don't know what's going on, but anyway. But unplug, reboot, that usually takes care of everything. It is my pleasure, because speaking of intelligent, much smarter than us, Dr. Sean O'Connor is in from Concord Orthopedics.
Morning, Peter.
How are you?
Good.
Good to see you.
Good to see you.
So has it been it's been an odd winter. Snow, ice, a lot of ice. Has it been an odd winter for skiers?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, when there was snow, for most people it was too cold to snow, or so windy the ski areas would shut down, and then it would be pouring rain, and then it would freeze solid overnight. It's frankly amazing to me how the ski areas have been able to recover. I was up at Loon, in January over the MLK weekend.
Right.
And it poured rain, as you recall, that Thursday and Friday.
Yep.
And then overnight, the temperatures plummeted. And I skied Saturday and Sunday. I was like, this is unbelievable.
It should have been good.
Well, it should have been a sheet of ice.
I'm sure they groomed it to
Were able to make snow. Yeah. And it was remarkable how they could recover.
Are you seeing more injuries this year because of the changing conditions?
You generally do.
That's what
when there's almost like fresh snow or new snow or man-made snow on top of ice, you're going to have that. You know, you're skiing with a perception that you've got snow underfoot, and you really, there's ice just underneath the surface.
Well, it's like driving.
I mean, yeah, absolutely.
You get a little snow and people go, oh, it's snow. No, there's stuff under
it. There's a lot of black ice under it. Exactly right.
Wow. So, yeah, we've got, now they're saying, well, they're being a little guarded, but they're saying plowable amounts Wednesday and Thursday. I'm hearing some weather services are saying 8 to 12 inches.
Yeah, I've seen 6 to 12. Yeah.
People aren't going to know how to act. Good snow. Well, this is going to be great.
That's right.
But, you know, I'm hoping for the ski areas that it's not too late.
You know, it's always hard. We always say up here that it's kind of, if you're golfing in Massachusetts, even if the skiing's great here, you're not going to come up. But, you know, I'm not sure there's golfing yet in Massachusetts on, like, swamps of golf courses.
Or do they have power yet down there?
Yeah, not a lot of them, exactly.
Now, I know some people live in Marshfield, and they went,
it's a marsh.
It's
well named now.
It's like, wow. No. So other than that, what kind of winters have been for you? Because you do sports medicine at Concord Orthopedics.
Yeah, I mean, otherwise, sort of the usual, you know, just, you've got basketball going on and your weekend and lunchtime warriors and all the usual sort of activity going on. So other than that, pretty much standard, I would say.
Do you have to fight yourself? The lunchtime warriors that really shouldn't be doing this, and they come into you with sprains or breaks or whatever, do you find yourself fighting to say, what are you doing?
Well, the funny thing, you know, it's I'm not sure they're all the same, you know, as everything in life. There's the lunchtime warriors who, you know, play basketball 3-4 times a week, and they're probably in pretty good shape. And then there's the guys who go out once a week or once every other week, and that's a different story. It's you know, it's what's your general fitness, and that's the guys who are. It is surprising the guys who are just super fit are the guys that get hurt. And what do you say to them? You know, they got to keep doing what they're doing, or at least try.
Well, I remember Jim Fix, the cross country died of a heart attack.
Exactly.
So, I mean, how much more healthier can you get than Jim Fix?
Yeah. Well, you can't change genetics, right?
Well, that,
or the clock in some ways.
Yeah, that's the problem. So, how about kids? They getting ready now for spring sports?
Absolutely. Hopefully they are, because,
Do you see any of those that have suffered injuries in their run-up to the spring?
Well, generally what you see, so if a kid's been playing basketball or doing indoor track or something like that, they generally transition perfectly well because they're doing something.
Sure.
the kid who hasn't been doing something, or oddly enough, the kid who's been playing hockey is in shape, cardiovascular, they're skating, they're working out, et cetera. But then they switch to, say, lacrosse or baseball. And running is so different from skating that they think they're in shape. And again, cardiovascular wise, they probably are, but their muscles aren't. It's a completely different movement or motion, if you will. So the transition from, say, hockey to lacrosse is difficult on your body because it's just such a different motion.
Is it problematic for, when I was high school, it was like you do a fall thing and then you wouldn't do a winter thing. Then you do a spring thing.
Yeah.
We would like take the winter off, or you wouldn't do a fall thing and then maybe you do ski team.
Right.
And then we'd mail it in, like, do golf team.
Right.
Yeah, we had to do a gut. You know, get a letter. Hey, whatever.
Exactly.
But I mean, it was different then. Now you're finding kids doing 3-4 seasons.
Well, I think the ideal is to do 3-4 seasons of different sports. You know, the problem. So there's two problems. There's the problem of the kid who only plays lacrosse during lacrosse season,
right,
and is really not staying in shape in any way, shape, or form. So that's the kid who is going to start running and she's going to get a stress fracture or whatever.
Yep.
And then you see the boy or the girl who's playing baseball or softball year round. And that isn't good either, because then you're going to start to accumulate the overuse injury, the shoulder, the elbow injury from pitching, say. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the happy medium is probably exactly what you're saying, playing, you know, two different sports, but somehow staying in shape during your off season.
It seemed to work for us.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It just, that's,
it was burnout.
Right.
We just got burned out. It was always late bus. It was always running. It was always, and after a while you'd look up going, is it eight? What month is it?
Right.
Oh, okay. Even though we loved football, loved cross country, loved skiing, but it was just that constant thing. We couldn't do anything else.
Right. Well, I do think burnout is a huge issue with kids who specialize really early, because they don't have the chance to mentally or physically recover. When you're a kid, you're supposed to have fun. You know, I understand when you're playing Division I sport in college.
Yeah, well,
that should be fun on some level, but it's also work on some level, and I get that.
Right.
But when you're in high school, if it's not fun, something's wrong. And that does happen when kids are just year-round doing one sport. I mean, how can they not help but burn out?
What's the percentage of kids that come out of high school that are going to get a D1 scholarship?
Oh, scholarship.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you're working, you're training, you're playing your guts out.
Right.
You're leaving it all on the slope, on the basketball court, on the diamond, whatever. And okay, good, but...
The first thing to think about is if you're going to play in Division III, like Plymouth State, Keene, one of the NESCAC schools, there are no athletic scholarships.
Oh, there aren't?
No.
There's no D3 scholarships?
There's no D3 scholarships. Okay. So right there, take those right off the table.
Okay.
And the majority of kids who play a college sport coming out of high school are going to play Division III, because there's more Division III schools,
they have more
teams, et cetera. Division II has scholarships. But there aren't.
What's a D2 school?
D2 school would be St. A's.
Oh, okay.
SHNU is D2.
Okay.
I think Merrimack College might be D2. So those are the D2 schools.
Okay.
You know, in New Hampshire, you have, Dartmouth and UNH for Division I.
Right.
And Dartmouth Ivy Leagues have no scholarships for athletics.
They don't?
Nope. No athletics. They're all need-based.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, I don't know outside of the Ivy Leagues in Division I if there are other leagues within Division I that do that.
Cuts it down then.
It cuts it down.
Wow.
And then within a sport, you have a certain number of scholarships. So I think the sport that I'm most familiar with is women's lacrosse. So Division I women's lacrosse team. You might have somewhere between 20 and 30, or in some schools, 40 kids on a roster.
Mm-hmm.
But you probably have 9 scholarships. So the coach has 9 scholarships to distribute. So a kid might get a half scholarship or a quarter scholarship or something along those lines.
Now, see, I didn't know that Ivy League didn't do scholarships in athletics.
No.
So when I would go up to Scully Fahey and watch the Dartmouth women play,
yes,
that's no scholarship there.
No scholarship
there. Wow.
No.
I did not know that.
Yeah, I think...
And that was good action. I loved watching
the
Dartmouth women play.
Absolutely. And I think part of it, you know, when you're a high school kid and you're trying to apply to these schools, you know, the more you have on your side,
sure.
Like, you know, you played, you're a certain level athlete, that coach may want you. So it helps you get into a certain school. But it's not, at least for the Ivies, you're not going for a scholarship. Mm. Or say you want to go to Amherst or Williams or Bowdoin or a school like that. Obviously, super high-end schools. There's no scholarship there.
Or Bates.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
There's no scholarship there. It's just, you know, that may certainly make your application look better if the coach recognizes that you're a talent and they want you. Wow.
Now, you've been doing sports medicine for how?
30 years.
Okay. For 10 plus years.
Ten plus.
It's all how you present it, Sean.
Exactly,
you know that.
Exactly.
For over 10 years, Dr. O'Connor has been doing this. Have you noticed changes, good positive changes in training, which has reduced incidence of where you have to be called in?
I think I've seen some. I think there's stuff out there that can be utilized. There's a lot of programs now. FIFA has had this plus 11 program for ACL and basically lower extremity injury prevention. Mm-hmm. And when it's utilized, it works great. It definitely cuts down a number of ankle sprains, ACL tears, hamstring tears, blah, blah, blah. But it's just not used. You know, it needs to be used by the coaches. Ideally, it's done 3 times a week or incorporated into your practices, into your warmups and so forth. And a lot of times it isn't. Lacrosse has come out with I can't remember the name of it, but it's U.S. Lacrosse has come out with a very good comprehensive program for lower extremity injury prevention. And again, it's all up to the coaches
to implement it. Okay.
And that's the biggest issue is implementation.
We saw Lindsey Vonn
at
the Olympics and a few others. And it made me, she's just a walking poster child for orthopedic treatment.
Yes. Yeah.
How many times can you tear your ACL? How many times can you have it rebuilt? Can you have your ankles rebuilt before you finally have to say, I can't do it anymore?
Well, it really depends on all sort of the concurrent injury. So if a Lindsey Vonn tears her ACL skiing,
right,
she's not in a cutting sport. So if you reconstruct her ACL, she has a stable knee. She can ski again. In basketball, when you change direction, that's a cutting sport.
Okay.
And so a skiing ACL tear is a different injury, if you will.
Oh.
But if you have a stable knee, I mean, you could redo that multiple times.
You can.
Yeah. But now if she has damage to the joint surface in addition to that, or meniscus tear, that sort of thing, and then starts to develop arthritis, then you have the issue of, well, can I ski because I'm in so much pain? And, you know, someone like Lindsey Vonn probably has the mental fortitude to just put that in a compartment somewhere and still ski. You know, obviously the rest of us are like, wow, my knee hurts. I'm not doing this anymore. Right? I just can't do it anymore. So someone like that, a skier can get back to functioning at a high level. But a basketball player, football player, sometimes if they have a multi, like an MCL, ACL, something like that, they just can't do it anymore. They literally can't change direction.
Because
they lose the ability. Their knee just doesn't do what they want it to do anymore. So that's a different story.
Well, I've always wondered how many times you can rebuild a knee.
Yeah.
Before the surgeon says, I can do it, but, you know, it's really not worth it.
Yeah. Well, it definitely depends on what else is going on in the knee. You know, if you have an arthritic knee and you tear your ACL, you still have an arthritic knee. And
Good point. Now, when we were growing up, arthritis was always something that our grandfather had.
Right.
It was only for old people.
Right.
But now it's been introduced into people in their 20s.
Yeah.
That are skiing, that are doing this kind of stuff. How long does it take for arthritis? Obviously, it doesn't happen overnight.
Right.
But so with a Lindsey Vonn, how old is she, 32?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, maybe later 30s, but whatever. Okay.
But, I mean, we have athletes in their 20s, late 20s, 27, 28, 29, 30, that have arthritis.
Yes.
How long does it take in that level to make the presence felt, literally?
I would say generally about 5 to 20 years. It's a range because again, some people just tolerate arthritis.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting for me sometimes when I see a patient come in and I will x-ray the knee that hurts. And when we get a certain set of x-rays, we see both knees and the other knee looks awful. It's bone on bone and everything. I'm like, well, how's that knee? They're like, oh, that knee's fine. So
really?
Yeah. So to some level, we don't maybe necessarily understand arthritis as well as we think we do. Because when you look at a knee that's bone on bone, you figure that knee should really hurt.
Well, yeah.
And sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes it's the other knee. So maybe it's the process of getting to where that other knee is that's what hurts. It's hard to know all the time.
So with your example of knee, when I talked to Dr. Fox, somebody has a hip issue.
Mm-hmm.
They have a tendency to put off a procedure, and they suck it up. But they transfer their weight as they're walking.
Yes.
So now they're screwing up the other hip to compensate for the... Does the same thing happen in knees?
Probably, to some extent.
Really?
Yeah. I think for me as a sports medicine doctor, the interesting thing when we're learning more and more and more about when you tear your ACL, the minute you tear your ACL, there's all these reflex arcs that change, and it affects your gait and your strength on your other leg. So in other words, you tear your ACL and you tear your right ACL, your left hip stops working normally. So that all feeds into it, and that's all part of the rehab and why, you know, it takes a year or more to really recover from an ACL, because you've got to get all of that abnormal sort of neuromuscular function back to normal.
Wow.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. And this is all stuff, you know, we're just starting to learn.
You know, when we talk to your colleagues, they say, all right, we're going to do a procedure, but everybody wants to know, when am I going to be back to 100%?
Right.
Well, they said, 100% is a relative thing.
Yes.
And I appreciate that. But when you're talking sports medicine, they want to be back to 100%.
Right.
So you bring them back to 90. In their mind, are they saying, I'm at 100%, or this is as good as it gets, so now I've got to work within the parameters that my knee is giving me?
Well, again, everyone's different, and a lot of it depends on, again, concurrent injury. You know, is your meniscus torn, blah, blah, blah. But I think a lot of it depends on the sort of the quality of your rehab. It's you look at someone like a Tom Brady, for instance, or anyone in a high level collegiate program, their job becomes rehab. So they tear their ACL, they get their surgery the next day, they're in a gym somewhere and they're starting to work on motion. They're working on their other leg. They're working on core. And you know, a month down the road, they're probably working 4 to 6 hours a day on their rehab. And who can do that in the real world?
Yeah, I don't have a $20 million contract.
Exactly.
Yeah,
no, exactly.
Wow. When I tear the ACL, if I tear the ACL and the meniscus, which hurts?
Probably the meniscus.
Really?
Yeah. And the things that hurt when you tear your ACL are your knee swells up.
Right.
And when it gets tense and swollen, that hurts. You often get what's called a bone bruise, which is sort of the knee goes out of place,
okay,
and the bones sort of hit each other, and it's a type of fracture almost that we didn't know about even until we had MRI. And then we saw these things on MRI, and we're like, what's that?
Oh.
And we were realizing it was the so-called pivot shift phenomena. So when the knee goes out and tears the ACL, the bones shift, whack each other, if you will, and that results in an injury to the bone. And
does the bone go back?
Yeah, yeah.
Or it's just during that impact.
Exactly. Correct.
Ah. Wow. When I hear people say, okay, I twisted, I took a fall, I heard a pop.
Yes.
What's the pop?
The ACL tear.
It is the ACL. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm.
All right. Or the MCL. They pop. Ankles pop, too. They get a bad enough ankle sprain. It's the ligament.
No, and I hear that from Dr. Resnick. He's told me that.
Yes.
When you hear that, when you're running and all of a sudden you hear that pop.
Yeah.
Yeah, stop.
Or your Achilles, even. Yeah.
Have you done any of those?
Is this for knocking on
you are in great health.
Oh, thank you.
No, you are a poster child for being in good health after being in the business for over 10 years.
Yeah.
you're just in great shape. And then there were the rest of us that try to figure in my head, I'm 21 again. I can do this.
Right.
And then somewhere along the line, you realize the folly in that. I was like, damn, this is going to hurt.
Even if you work out, So I go to one of these boot camps, and it's great because if I
again,
was,
at, I
was
like at I said, home, you're a poster child, Sean.
Right, but if I was at home, you know, I wouldn't say, oh, I think I'm going to do 20 push-ups or I'm going to do some ab work. I'm just not going to do that. Right. but if I go somewhere and do it, and you know, everyone's different. Some people, like my wife, have the discipline to do that at home. But I've realized that, you know, over 50 or over 60, I just shouldn't be jumping anymore. Jumping's not a good thing. And this is stuff I did 5-10 years ago. And I just realized, okay, you can't do that anymore. And I think people do have to modify what they do as they get older. They have to listen to their body. If you know, you come home from boot camp and you're in agony the whole day, probably something was wrong.
All right, so let's assume you're at boot camp. Mm-hmm. And through no fault of the boot camp, there's no litigation pending.
No.
you tear your ACL, your meniscus.
Right.
Would you be a good patient or a bad patient?
Oh, gosh, that's a really good question. I think doctors are typically horrific patients because they're, I got to go back to work. I can't do this. So, yeah, doctors are kind of famously poor patients.
Uh-huh. Yeah, watching the screen during the procedure. Hey, no.
Yeah.
Leave that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Wow. So what are you doing today?
Patients and I think maybe rotator cuff surgery this afternoon.
Rotator cuff?
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. That's the one where people have the arm and the little sling.
Oh, yes. The lovely sling.
Yeah. It's like a little shelf. And when I see people grocery shopping, and I'm like, oh. I know people have done the procedure. And usually midway through their recovery, had I known now what I knew, you know, I wouldn't have done the damn thing.
Right, right.
Invariably, everyone swears that they would not have the – is that just reaction? I mean, they really need it done, right?
They need it done. Okay. But it's a difficult recovery. There's no doubt about it. I did, you're talking about those slings with the pillow.
Yeah, yeah.
I had a patient. This was brilliant. He actually hollowed out a thing, so he turned it into a cup holder, which was genius. And I'm surprised no one's patented that or come up with that.
Pat, quick.
Yeah, exactly.
We're okay. On it.
When we're off at 10. but I typically see people grocery shopping, and they just look miserable.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, I see. Yeah, yeah. Or people will say, oh, yeah, I do this pop, 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 pop. But they say, I'm not going to do it. I'm just going to, I'm like, all right, whatever.
Yeah. Well, it really depends for me and my sort of, when I'm treating someone with a rotator cuff tear, if they don't have pain, they don't have night pain, they can do what they want to do, and they understand that it could get worse over time, I'm okay with that. And of course, they're okay with it because they're not going through a big operation. But if they can't sleep at night, that's a different story.
One of the things I've tried to impress upon people is just because you go to Concord Orthopedics doesn't mean you're automatically going under the blade.
Oh, I would say, at least in my practice, the vast majority do not.
That's what I was going to say. So the vast majority, whether it's knee, hip, shoulder, whatever, you go in, going under the blade may not be the optimal solution to your particular problem.
Oh, exactly.
Okay. Well, but I mean, it's a scary premise.
It is.
People go, oh my God, I'm going to go. They're going to cut me. They're going to. We automatically leap to the worst possible scenario.
Of course we do.
You know, that's human
that's
nature,
right.
I guess.
That's right.
And then when the doctor goes, oh, well, you know, a couple of shots and a brace, maybe PT.
Right.
Really? That's it? Oh, I've got a whole new lease on life.
Right.
This is great.
Yeah. And I would think that what you just described is probably the most common sort of treatment scenario.
Is it?
Yeah.
See, I actually listen to you guys. Dr. Sean O'Connor, Concord Orthopedic. Sean, always great seeing you.
Great seeing you, Peter. Thank
you. And we will take a break. Back with more.
We start your day the right way. Good morning, New Hampshire, with Peter St. James and Pat Kelly. Weekdays, 6 to 10 a.m. on 107.7 The Pulse.